HSS website. As long as the content remains current, the two previous teleconferences that we have done, those recordings are on the website, and you can go on there and access. All lines are currently muted, so if you have any questions, please submit them through the chat box. At the conclusion of our remarks, we'll answer the questions in the order they're received. Given the anticipated participant volume, we ask that questions be framed broadly and in the best interest of all participants. Specific questions pertaining to your agency only may be better addressed through email. We'd like to thank you for all the hard work that you put in daily to protect the health and safety of Missourians, and know that it is recognized and greatly appreciated. So the number of cases of COVID-19 being reported in the United States and Missouri is rising quickly. This increase is expected given an increase in testing and ongoing rapid spread of the disease across communities and across the state. While these numbers are concerning, the increase isn't unexpected. More robust data will allow us to better understand and track the size and scope of the outbreak and strengthen prevention and response efforts. So nationwide, as of 7 p.m. last night, the CDC reports that there are 140,904 confirmed and presumptive positive cases of COVID-19, and that nationwide there are 2,405 COVID-19 related deaths. All 50 states, the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, Guam, the Northern Mariana Islands, and the U.S. Virgin Islands have all reported cases of COVID-19. In Missouri, we currently have 28 mobile sites that are active, as well as the DHSS lab and several private labs. Currently, we are conducting over 2,000 tests per day that are being processed. And as of 2 p.m. yesterday, the state of Missouri has 1,327 positive cases with 14 deaths reported. And you can expect those numbers to go up with the official report at 2 o'clock today. The hardest hit areas include St. Louis County with 492 cases. St. Louis City has 136, Kansas City with 119, Jackson County with 77, and Boone County with 64. However, we are starting to see a rise in our smaller and more rural communities, and you can anticipate that those numbers will continue to grow in those rural areas. Just to give you an update on some other things, with the social distancing and stay-at-home orders in place, we're actually seeing a decrease in the number of motor vehicle accidents nationwide and here in Missouri. But unfortunately, we're seeing an increase in the number of child abuse cases nationwide. And not sure if that's because of the stay-at-home orders or if that's a direct relation or not. But we're also seeing a blood bank shortage as the number of blood drives have gone down. And as I'm sure you're aware of by now, on Monday, the governor extended the state's social distancing orders for another 30 to 60 days past their original April 6 expiration. And yesterday, the governor closed some state parks. And as of yet, he has not issued a statewide stay-at-home order. But before I go on to the next topic, I want to ask the same question that I asked last week. Is anyone out there experiencing staffing shortage as a direct result of personnel being considered a person under investigation or having tested positive for COVID-19? If you would, please just put your response in the chat box. And so far I'm seeing from everybody that doesn't appear that anybody's experiencing any staffing shortages yet.
What?
All righty. Well, as you continue to respond to that, I appreciate your responses. I'll continue on. As you are probably aware, this morning, we went live with our NMSIS Elite system, the NMSIS 3.3.4, which means we're no longer accepting the version 2 data. And as we anticipated, there are few glitches that we figured would happen, as you always have anytime you start up a new system. And know that a lot of folks have been calling ImageTrend for help. We do have a call with ImageTrend a little later this afternoon, and we'll be working those things out. So stay tuned for more information on that. Our new license management system, we will be going live with that next Monday, April 6th, for all the new initial EMT, AMT, paramedic, and community paramedic applications. And we'll go live with the renewal applications and the agency applications on May the 1st. If you have any questions about either one of those, please call our data manager, Peggy Huddleston. Excuse me, her phone number is 573-526-1969, or you can get a hold of her at peggy.huddleston@health.mo.gov. So within the last week, you all probably saw the press release that COVID-19 testing is now available for first responders and healthcare workers. So I just wanted to give you a brief synopsis of what that means and how that works. So if you're a healthcare provider or first responder and you become symptomatic following a possible exposure, go to your primary care physician or a mobile testing site and clearly identify yourself as a healthcare provider or first responder and direct them to send that test to the state health lab and not their commercial laboratory, because commercial labs are backed up to the volume of tests being performed, and the state health lab is able to get the results for you all much quicker. But it's recommended that you clearly advise them of this so that the tests don't get batched in with others that will go to the site's commercial lab. The logistics for these tests to get to the state health lab will be by courier, and these routes are posted on the DHSS website. We do know that Mercy Hospital in St. Louis, that their drive-through testing, that they do have a plan in place to, if you identify yourself, that they have put that plan in place to make sure that your tests are fast-tracked to the state health lab. Now, if you are asymptomatic, tests aren't being performed on asymptomatic people, healthcare providers, first responders, or anybody else, because they'll come back negative. Although the virus may be in the person's system, tests won't be accurate unless you're actually symptomatic. So that would obviously give you a false sense of security, which y'all know is not a good thing. And then the last thing that I want to mention is the state is currently working with the National Guard to identify sites that could be used as alternative care sites for COVID-19 patients. This afternoon, DHSS and MHA are hosting a webinar to talk about this, as well as PPE orders and the distribution process. So I did send that information out via our listserv yesterday, and I believe the Missouri Ambulance Association sent that out to their members a little earlier. So with that, I will turn things over to Dr. Braithwaite.
Thanks, Sam. So a couple things from my end. Most of you should be aware, the State Regional Medical Directors Committee went through and accepted several regional protocols at our last meeting. I believe those are all posted on the regional websites as well as on the Missouri Ambulance Association website if you're looking to reference those. So there's ones from the East Central region, one from Central, and one from Southwest. There is also an approved protocol now from Southeast that's been approved at the regional level that's going to come to the next regional medical directors meeting that essentially deals with the issues related to the high consequence pathogens. At this point, obviously, COVID. So there are some components in there that include screening elements that can be used at dispatch, so that providers have a higher level of awareness pre-arrival that the patient may have symptoms consistent with COVID, and then also different management options. So be sure you're aware of what those are in your region. I just got sent an updated version of Southwest, so please, please, please stay current with those. And sort of another note is there's a lot of word of mouth going around about different things, and things are moving pretty fast. So expect that there will be changes in protocols as our knowledge evolves and as discussions take place around different issues. But until you have seen it in writing and it is officially approved by your agency medical director or by your regional medical director, it don't count. So it has to be captured in writing somewhere, so it's official. And if you're hearing word of mouth and you're not sure if it's true or not, please get with your medical director of your agency or with your regional medical director to verify before you change your practice. So there's a lot of moving parts. Just make sure that you're working under official guidance that provides the appropriate statutory authority, liability protection, yada-da-yada-da-yada-da. So just a point of awareness for everybody. Next point, we talked about this the last time. Workforce protection is a big deal. Everybody's been great about going through getting PPE from the cache. I know a lot of people didn't get as much as they wanted, but we're kind of plugging along. One of the discussion points has also been people are concerned about taking it home. We're all concerned about taking it home. None of us want to give this to our families. And so let me just kind of throw you back to the OSHA requirements. Most of the facilities should have ability for providers to bring clean clothes to work and to wash their work clothes at work and leave them there. That includes your shoes. So that would be a reasonable best practice. Some people are shucking all their clothes right outside their door. Hopefully that is in a protected area. And then, you know, making sure everything gets washed and you go straight to the shower when you get home. Obviously it's ideal if you can do that at work and not even bring those things in the house. So just make sure you're aware of what your agency's capabilities are there. And please, for heaven's sakes, don't take this home to your families. Another discussion point was the issue of quarantining people pending test results. As Sam highlighted, if the person's not symptomatic, then you're giving yourself a false sense of security because the nasal swab's not going to show anything because you're not shedding virus in your, or the titer's not high enough that it's going to be positive. So for a couple weeks now, I think everybody's been already taking the precaution that every patient we encounter is presumed to be positive. That helps protect us against things like unsuspected patients or patients who are not yet symptomatic who then come positive 2 or 3 days later when they're in the hospital for their syncopal episode or their trauma or what have you. So please follow the recommendations for precautions and PPE, masks, gloves. As Sam mentioned, we've been seeing pretty significant delay, especially in the outpatient testing labs, but also in some of the hospital labs. So it can easily be 1 to 3 days, or in some of the cases of some of the private labs I've heard, it's been 3 to 8 days to get a result back. Well, obviously that's not terribly clinically helpful to any of us to find out 8 days later. And it's also not probably smart to be quarantining our healthcare workforce, be it EMS or anybody else, for 8 days waiting for a test result. So as long as you guys are screening your providers when they come to work, a lot of agencies reported the last time that you were screening temps twice a day and having people self-monitor. And as long as people are asymptomatic, then wearing PPE should protect them as well as the patients. Once they become symptomatic, they should be staying home. I know one of my agencies was approached by some manufacturer of some test that's was used in China, and they were going to test everybody. But my recommendation to my own agency was that's not very helpful, A, because it's not FDA approved, so we don't know if the test is any good. So that's the first problem. Second problem is if you're not symptomatic, you may be falsely negative. So that's the second problem. And then the third problem is, okay, so they're positive and they're asymptomatic. Okay, then we're still wearing PPE, which we're already doing. And if they're symptomatic, they should be staying home anyway, whether they have a positive test or not. So I didn't really see how the test was going to help us any, even assuming it was a good test. So I think you're going to have to largely depend on whether people are symptomatic and being very diligent about your screening processes before people come to work. I know one of the things that Sam's been working hard on that was allowed within the governor's executive order and the authorization from Dr. Williams at DHSS was the notification, the capability to, under the public health law, to notify EMS agencies or PSAPs of persons under investigation or people who have tested positive prior to arrival. We apparently only have about 35 PSAPs in the state that are not doing pre-screening questioning. So if you're in an area where that is occurring, you might want to just personally reach out to your PSAP and see if you can either get them to do the questioning that's pretty standard, or to work together with the people that are getting your testing results so that you can have that as a pre-arrival instruction or pre-arrival notification that there's either a person under investigation or a person that's positive. So you can follow those recommendations where, you know, only one person goes in the house and all those other things that are out there that try to limit the exposure of our providers. Let's see. I think the other thing Sam also mentioned was this issue of alternate transport sites. I know a number of the hospitals are starting to develop some of these. And I've had some conversations with some folks around the issues in rural areas and availability of testing sites. I understand that that's problematic in our perfect world. Obviously, the people that don't need intensive care would ideally stay in the rural area, even in potentially an alternate care site where you can provide oxygen and monitoring and trend them and then transport them when they actually need transport, which they may or may not. That would help with EMS availability, since obviously it's EMS that's going to have to transport them if they're leaving their rural communities. So anything that you can do to work with your hospitals on potentially having additional care sites for the services they're able to provide and not just shipping everybody into town, that would be ideal. And then again, the relationship with the testing sites so that you can find out who's positive would be helpful. Let's see, what else did I have? I think that was it. I guess anything else from your standpoint, Sam?
No, I think that covers everything that we have to be focused on for today. Again, if you didn't receive the email regarding the webinar this afternoon, a little later this afternoon, between DHSS and MHA regarding PPE and the discussion regarding that, as well as a further discussion on the development of these alternative care sites that are being worked on at the state level with the National Guard and getting the DMAT involved with that. Please send me an email and I can forward that information to you because you do have to register for that one. However, I will let you know this is geared more towards the agency administrators, so because there is a limited amount of space. And with that, I guess, Dr. Braithwaite, unless you have anything else, we can start taking a look at some of the questions.
I think my only other comment was sort of a global comment, which is there are a lot of moving parts here. And I know most of you are probably getting hundreds of emails a day that are super hard to sort through all of and to make heads or tails of what you actually need to pay attention to. You know, be sure to lean on your specialty organizations for some help in filtering through some of that and having reliable sources of information that are actionable, because there is a lot of crap out there that is masquerading as truth or is masquerading as a best practice. And we just have to be really diligent about staying connected to what is the best thing to do to make sure we're on top of this thing. I'm going to give it back to you for the questions, Sam.
All righty. Well, let's see. Looks like the first question that hasn't already been answered, has the state provided PSAPs the ability to provide the callback number to the provider with computer-aided dispatch? We hear some concerns regarding that. I do not know the answer to that. Dr. Braithwaite, have you heard anything regarding that?
I don't know the answer. I think there's a couple different types of tests, and honestly, I don't know granularly enough what their strengths and weaknesses are as far as their, you know, positive and negative ability to distinguish. So that's probably somewhere in the 2,000 emails that I haven't made it through, so.
Well, that is a question we could follow up with the 911 board on to see if they could possibly answer that. Dr. Russell makes the comment that the new universal precaution standard are gloves, mask, face shield, isolation gown with high risk or known positive. Let's see. Next question. Why are non-EMS providers getting Healthcare Coalition PPE shipments of ambulance providers are not? I think that would probably be a good question to ask in this webinar this afternoon, because I do not know the answer to that. Let's see. Harrisonville received N95 masks in the first state cash release. If we need more, do we have to resubmit another order form to get in the loop? This was through our Healthcare Coalition. Yes, it's my understanding if you've already received an order and you need more, that you do have to submit another order. Let's see. We at Pulaski County EMS are using N95 masks for 5 patient contacts unless visibly contaminated or encounter a positive case or airway procedure is performed due to supply level. Thoughts? I'll turf that one to you, Dr. Braithwaite. I think you're on mute.
In fact, I am. Was that the question from Michael Hartness? Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's the practice that's being done now, the N95 mask for 5 patient contacts unless visibly contaminated or you have a definite positive case due to supply levels. I know a bunch of people are working on ways to be able to extend those N95 masks until we have something that is moderately definitive. You know, I know people are trying UV lights and spray this, that, and the other thing. I would stick with the 5 patient contacts for now until we get something more definitive. Now, I know a lot of people are wearing like fabric masks outside of the N95 and then disposing of those to allow the N95 to be extended in sort of the N95 life to be extended, because we are dwindling down on our PPE supplies, and a little hard to say what that's going to look like in the future. So the longer we can stretch those out, the better. And then I see the next question. If the goal is to keep COVID patients out of the hospital, I mean, obviously we're only trying to keep people out of the hospital if they're well enough to be out of the hospital. There are some screening tools with regard to your question about, are there a standardized list of questions and follow-up requirements? So there are some screening tools that are part of those regional protocols that we've included and that are there as resources, especially, I know Southeast, let me just read it to you. We basically stole the screening tool that Maryland is using, and that was being used to determine whether, you know, at some point, which has not yet occurred, whether we would be having EMS initiated refusals if we ended up with a call volume that just wouldn't allow for transport. So the questions include things like the patient's age, suspected viral syndrome with at least 2 of the specific symptoms, whether they're immunosuppressed, diabetic, heart disease, COPD, and then some vital sign and vital sign parameters, their lung exam, their ability to ambulate and do self-care, so that that would help you sort out who not to transport. And that if we get to that point, which we have not yet, that we, it wouldn't even be an AMA. We would just say, it's not against medical advice. We're essentially at that point saying we've gone through our checklist and there's no medical indication to transport you, because we've determined at this point you do not have any needs that require being at a hospital, and therefore transporting you to said hospital is not helpful to anybody. So we are working on that. We're having those discussions at the State Regional Medical Directors Committee. I expect that's going to be a big topic of discussion next week, so stay tuned. I think that's probably the next thing that's coming. And again, if you all are identifying needs that you think that we need to discuss at the State Medical Directors Group, please send those to me so that I can scratch together information and have us address it in some balanced way. What's next, Sam?
So there was a question about a couple of weeks ago, there was an issue of an ambulance crew responding to nursing homes and being held up due to their evaluation before they were allowed in the facility, and what was the final decision on that? And there were some other folks that chimed in on that. I will let you know that situation was addressed and handled at that level. We did handle it with the EMS agency that was involved, and our folks at DHSS on the long-term care side of things also addressed it with the long-term care facilities. But all long-term care facilities have received a letter. This has been several weeks ago, that EMS are considered essential personnel, and so they are allowed within the nursing home to treat patients and pick them up, obviously. We do encourage, if you're having an issue with the nursing home, obviously try and work that out with the nursing home on an individual basis, as it sounds like a couple of you have done here. But if for whatever reason you're not able to work things out between yourselves and the long-term care facility, please let us know, and we'll see what we can do for you.
Let's see, the nursing homes in the area are screening employees before they enter. And again, along the lines of what Sam said, I mean, if it's a you probably know all the nursing homes that are in your area. And if you don't have a huge number of them, maybe coming to some agreement that if you're screening your employees twice a day, that they're willing to accept that as a standard. You just never can tell, right? If a patient's tested at urgent care prior to ED transport, I would think that the urgent care, whoever sends the test, should own notification of results. And I know I've spoken to somebody that has connected to their urgent care center in their area to have the urgent care let them know about positives so that the providers can be aware. Then, are all PSAPs in Missouri releasing positive COVID patient addresses to their local health departments? Sam, I think the answer is no, but that the executive order and the letter from Dr. Williams allows that, so that would be a conversation that should be significantly easier if you have those two items in your hand. Is that correct, Sam?
Yeah, from what I've been told, local public health agencies that have that information have been releasing that to the PSAPs that have contacted them and asked them for it. But the PSAP needs to contact the local public health agency to obtain that information. I'm not sure the local health agency is just going to call all the PSAPs in their area to give them that information. So there's got to be a little proactiveness on the part of the PSAP.
Let's see, talking about pre-plans. Yeah, somebody said they're getting information only for positive, self-isolated, and quarantined. So essentially the positives and the persons under investigation. Is that correct? Yeah, and the address is flagged then. That's helpful. Yeah, that's the kind of relationship you're looking for. And, you know, of all the terrible things that are going on, I'm hoping that some of the relationship building that is happening sort of under fire currently is going to be something that will help us going forward on other issues, like these better communication with our health departments and our PSAPs, I think can only be good for lots of other reasons in the future. Are there other issues you all are seeing that we need to think about from the medical director standpoint? I know there's been discussion on various assorted lists, and I know there's discussion in the East region about, in East Central region about cardiac arrest management and limiting exposure that has not changed yet. Whether it does or not is still a matter of discussion. Obviously, an individual agency medical director can make a decision that based on the volume of patients they're seeing or resources available or what have you, that change in cardiac arrest management may be warranted, but we're not seeing that at the state level yet.
Any other questions or comments?
Oh, that's real nice, Dr. Russell. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Something as simple as a Google spreadsheet that everybody can get into. That's awesome. Y'all are a quiet bunch today. Everybody's tired. I think everybody figured out a couple days ago that this is for sure not a sprint, but a marathon.
Dr. Braithwaite, I'll let you answer that one from Kevin.
So I think if his partners are asymptomatic and they're wearing appropriate masks, that it's fine for them to keep working. If you're out of abundance of caution, I don't know what the density of providers is in your agency, If they're around other people when they're at work, an abundance of caution might say have them wear a mask also when they're not on calls. But I don't see why they shouldn't be able to work if they remain asymptomatic and you're screening them regularly. Is anybody else instituting a different practice? Because the problem is over the next week, you're going to find out that every single human being in your agency probably has been exposed to somebody that turned up positive, and there ain't going to be anybody left by next Friday if we send everybody home. I don't know that anybody's, I don't know that there's an official okay for using the UV lights to decon N95s. I've seen a bunch of things out there. There's some spray concoctions that people are putting on them, and I haven't seen anything that says that's 100% legit yet. And yes, social distancing in the office. Exactly. Other thoughts? All right, Sam, are we going to give everybody 22 minutes of their life back?
It looks like it.
Sweet.
So, yeah. Hey, well, thank you, everybody, for joining us today. We appreciate it. Appreciate all the hard work that y'all are doing. And, stay safe out there.
All right, and we will set up another one, and you'll get it through Sam's e-list. Thanks, everybody. Stay safe out there.